The Hawks took a backward step this past weekend, dominated by the D's in what was a tedious round two clash at the MCG. The highlights could be counted on one hand, as Hawthorn fans were left to wonder just what the hell has happened to our best players. We're here to sift through the talking points of a tough loss and look ahead to an Easter Monday blockbuster right here on the Hawk Talk podcast. My name is Nick Mason, and Tiz, let's first take a moment to highlight what went right on the weekend.
Oh, okay. Well, this shouldn't take long. What went right?
It was a dreary display, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, the first quarter I was like, well, at least Sicily's making sure his average is up over two games here. He got 15 touches in that first quarter, but geez, they've come for Hawthorn for that style of play.
Oh, Hawthorn's copped a lot of shtick from the media, for sure.
Peter Swab loved that stuff. I was getting all, you know, nostalgic in the stands, watching them pass around the back for extended periods of time.
So I had the pleasure of standing with one of our listeners. And basically what I was saying at the time, at that point in the match, I think we're only 14 points down and we're chipping it around. And I said, look, that's fine. We've got all game. I couldn't care less how entertaining this is. I don't mind us being patient. This is fine. But our failure to capitalize on any of that stuff. I mean, as the game wore on, the more it was like, oh, that was actually totally pointless. We didn't actually mount anything from that strategy.
Well, I mean, the D's were tremendously disciplined in front of the ball.
They were. They deserve full credit for that. They were great.
We were looking for holes. We were patient. We were perhaps too patient. And we needed to run and gun. But every time we did, we just got shown up and had another goal against us. So quarter time happens and they don't do that again.
Well, they adjusted mid-game, which is a positive.
Look, I can see what they were thinking about, controlling the ball, controlling possession, trying to pick through the defensive nature of Melbourne and making sure they didn't kick to either Gorn or May or Lever. But then when Chol completely destroys May and Lever fortunately hasn't done an ACL, but he thought he had at the time in what seemed an innocuous incident, and he's off, and you still can't mount much of a challenge, that's when questions have to be asked, really.
Yeah, that was arguably the most concerning point. But I want to stay with that Chol versus May moment to set up Bruce in the goal square, because when I talk about counting the positives, that had me up and about. I mean, not because, you know, May had broken ribs. I'm not talking about that. But we broke through.
I felt that. I felt that in the stand when the initial hit with the knee and then he landed on him. I was like, oh. Anyway,
it was brutal, but it set up Bruce and it gave us something to get excited about. And then really, mate, I don't want to be too negative, but I really only counted two other moments of the match that I could hang my hat on and say, well, that excited me and I quite liked that. The first that I'm going to refer to here was Nick Watson's first career goal.
Was it eight misses before the goal? Is that right? On the ninth attempt?
Well, technically, he had scored a goal by the number of behinds he had to that stage in his career.
Oh, that's not how this works.
So we're not hiding behind that?
Jetta will definitely tell you that's not how it works, because he would have had five before he kicked his first.
That's right. No, Nick Watson finally got the monkey off the back, and you were riding it, mate. You were right in front of that kick. You were watching it sail towards you through the big sticks.
Pretty much yelled out, kick it to me, and he did. He missed because I was on the top level, but it was straight to me. Actually, I was rewarded for having the stupidity to go out and see my Melbourne supporting friends and sit in the top of the Ponsford stand.
Okay, so this is good, because you had to know this question was coming. When you sent me that vision of Nick Watson's goal, I was like, that ain't the MCC. What is Tiz doing there?
Well, it got to halftime and they're like, where are you? Are you coming out? Are you going to come and see us? We've bought a token Hawthorn supporter who would like to see someone else who supports Hawthorn. And I said, I rolled out at about half time, and yeah, I was very fortunate to be, and I got some great video of that kick and a wonderful moment. And the celebrations, the whole team got around him. And look, he had the most shots on goal all day, didn't he, Watson? So he had a very good game.
He's got something, for sure, Nick Watson. I think he's going to be a very special player. It's only a matter of time before it begins to seriously click and present as seriously damaging and threatening for opposition clubs. One more thing before I leave this moment is I'm glad we got some clarity on just what happened there, why you weren't in the MCC. All I got to say about that is typical Melbourne. They see Hawthorn, they're like, come join us. Bloody 96 all over again. We voted no.
You know, there wasn't much to crow about, Nick. It wasn't great fun out there, but I did enjoy that moment, and I also enjoyed the moment, and you got this listed on the rundown as one of your highlights, and that's McKenzie beating Gorn on the wing, and then Mitch Lewis just absolutely sinking one on the run.
Yeah, that play was excellent. And McKenzie dashing away from Gorn reminded me of Happy Gilmore, where Shooter McGavin is trying to escape the actor Richard Keel, who people might recognise as playing Jaws in the James Bond franchise. But that, it's how ridiculous it looked, with Gorn just sort of loping after McKenzie hopelessly. It was very funny.
Was it mid-third quarter we got the please vote for your MVP or something? And I was thinking, oh, this is going to be tough.
I think you mean mid-Tuesday afternoon, don't you? Because
no, that was today for next week. I was like, geez, we're having a mare. What are we doing?
How does that happen? Very strange.
I didn't try to vote. Did you try to vote?
No, I didn't try. I was too busy taking a screenshot and putting it on our socials.
Anyway, Josh Weddle was MVP on the day, and deservedly so. He's playing quite well.
It's fairly obvious that this guy is set for superstardom. 21 touches at 76.25%, 10 marks, one goal, one. Probably should have had two, to be honest. I think his first attempt was pretty disappointing. But Josh Weddle is a shining light this year, two rounds in so far. I'm really enjoying his work.
And the 23 went forward, which is a great sight to see, with the curls and the red hair. And no, I enjoyed that.
I've seen a few people online on our socials suggesting that we could see that again.
Well, look, our forward line, when we get it there, is actually functioning quite well for shots on and marks inside 50. And, you know, it's quite a good percentage in terms of it, as long as we get it in there, we usually have a shot on goal. It's just that the midfield isn't performing, and we have to rely on taking it all away from defence to attack.
Indeed, and you just got to make sure that you finish off your good work, which we didn't see in round one. So on the occasions that we're getting it in there, we're getting opportunities, but if we're squandering them, then that makes it tough as well.
Yeah, well, our expected score this time was 46, and our actual was 38, so it's still in the way. And look, we can only hope it gets better. But much of the game plan is working, but that midfield, it's just really hampering us.
It is indeed. Really, if we're talking about shining lights, as I did for Josh Weddle, it's once again James Warple who's carrying this midfield on his back. 27 touches this time, 11 of those contested, the most of any Hawk out there. A team high 9 inside 50s as well, an equal team high 6 score involvements. He's holding up his end of the bargain. I wish the rest would do the same.
Yeah, I mean, he had 3 clearances. McKenzie had 2. Nash had 5. Newcomb had 2. Look, we know that Melbourne are an excellent midfield. That is the best part of their lineup, and they do. They've got a very good lineup. I hate having to say it, but we just didn't have anything to combat them. They kept running through the front of our defence, straight into the 50. It was the same thing when we did kick a goal. There was an immediate reply, just like Essendon. But look, I thought there were guys we should call out as well who had, like, the team didn't perform very well on the day, but there were still individuals like Massimo D'Ambrosio who repeated what he'd done in round one. And massive tick for the guy.
Set out and proved that it wasn't a flash-in-the-pan performance, that round one game. Consolidated our confidence in what he can do in brown and gold. 23 touches, 8 marks and 2 clearances. Staying with the back line, I've also quite liked Jack Scrimshaw, his work this year. You know, it's been well documented that he had a very underwhelming 2023. He wasn't up to scratch, but, you know, he's gone on record saying that he's determined to turn that around, and he's making good on that. 26 touches at 92.3%.
Yeah.
That is a great return in a defensive line that is under siege and needs that disposal efficiency.
And he wanted the ball, didn't he? He had eight contested. You know, that's just pure endeavour to get that ball. I still don't like watching Eamon running around defence. I didn't like Hardwick in attack. I understand these are experiments, but the more I see Hardwick in attack, the longer I think to myself, is he looking elsewhere at the end of the year? And, you know, do we just have to find a replacement for him? And we're doing what Melbourne did with Frawley before he came to us.
Perhaps, yeah. I mean, he's a restricted free agent. The list was published today of free agents and restricted free agents. And, yeah, who knows what he's thinking there. But, yeah, I don't like seeing him in attack. I don't think he needs to be there. I think he's far too valuable as a defender.
I guess it was his childhood dream, and they're giving him a shot at that. Now, we had Gunston as the sub again. I don't think that's really a good idea to have one of your oldest players as a sub, especially if you get an early injury to anybody, especially a midfielder, because we're already light on there. We don't seem to have enough rotations through the midfield. I just don't understand it. And I was perplexed by the lack of changes in the lineup from the week before. But as we said on the podcast, we sort of expected that. We expected that he would back those blokes in to perform again, and it had only been the differential in the goal kicking that had really seen us lose to Essendon. So we thought that might happen. But surely this week, after the VFL performances, and so many guys put their hand up and said, I can do better than what you saw on the MCG yesterday, surely there's got to be some changes.
Well, there was one particular move that we called for that was actually honoured this game. That was Finn in the starting lineup, and he had a job to do. But I got to say that, you know, I didn't think the tag was super effective, and I think what became glaring about his game is that the disposal efficiency is just not up to par at the moment and hasn't been his career. That's not been his go-to, and I think it's still found wanting. I think he just had a smidge over 50% disposal efficiency, which that's going to hurt.
Yeah, so there's actually not much difference between the average disposal efficiency for Melbourne and Hawthorn, really at all. They're 76% and we're 74%. But some of our most, well, who you'd think would be our surest players, Bruce, Gunston, Lewis, they're all 50%. Even Connor McDonald had a rough day with 53%.
Well, let's talk about this, because so many players we would normally hold in very high regard have seriously lowered their colours this year so far. And I'm talking with the preseason as well. Their output has been well below what we've witnessed previously. I'm talking Lewis, I'm talking Nash, Newcomb. I think even Sicily, to some extent, from a certain perspective, none of them has looked anywhere near like they did in 2023. And I feel like Bruce and Gunston are just sort of hanging around. It's very early days, I accept that. I just find it interesting how it's the new recruits that are inspiring some confidence here in me, in particular. I don't know about you, mate.
Well, they're the excitement, aren't they? They really are. I thought Frost was good again. I mean, he did another 100% disposal efficiency. It's just
absolutely unheard of. Frost ball has not reared its ugly head just yet. It's going to happen.
And Lewis is getting some very good opponents each week, isn't he? Like, he's had Mackay, he's had May and Lever, and then he had Petty, and next he has Stewart. And then the following week, he's got more. It's going to be... Although, have you thought about this? Just quietly. You'd expect Brisbane to roll Collingwood. And then there we are in Adelaide on the Sunday. Tickets are still available, I believe, for that game. Surprisingly.
It's one of the only ones that hasn't sold out.
And we can absolutely put a dagger in the back-to-back. That is, even if it's already out of the question, it'll still feel great.
So you've gone with dagger. I've gone with hammer and a box of nails.
But look, we're not bringing the pressure. We're not really moving the ball that quickly. But there's moments, you know. There's moments.
Yeah. There's moments, but it all gets undone in the guts, really. Over round one and round two, where negative 18 in centre clearances, minus 40 in tackles, that says we lose the footy, and then we do bugger all to get it back. It's too late. The efficiency with which it is whisked to their forward line, the opponent's forward line, for a score, is quite startling.
We're getting absolutely punished on turnover, and there seems to be a lot of space available when they get it into that into their 50. I don't know how they're going to combat that, but look, can we have we done enough looking back at that game? I just like to forget it, Nick. I'm not sure they'd be doing too much analysis at the club even.
Well, I don't know about that, but I feel compelled to defend myself in some measure against some of the Ned Reeves stands out there. I got tears mid-sip.
Little Reeves, eh? He did take a contested mark this week, didn't he? I'm not sure whether it was awarded, but he definitely nearly had someone near him when he marked it.
Look, I've seen the statistics. People have been very vocal on social media and our social channels about Ned Reeves, and maybe they think I'm being too harsh. Look, he had one hit out to advantage. Chole had two.
Wow.
Okay? Gawn had five, but he's Max Gawn. I accept that. Reeves had negative 12 metres gained. He sent us backwards. Gawn had 390 metres gained. And now people are going to turn around and say, yes, but he's Max Gawn, and I know this.
Hmm.
But I wonder if we could do better. Is that so controversial?
Yeah, I know what you mean. Now, look, Reeves had, apart from Connor Nash, the most contested wins. So he's putting his head over the ball. He's doing what he can. But surely we need something else there. It won't happen, Nick. I don't think we'll see Meek this week. I don't think we'll see it.
I don't think so either. I think you were 100% spot on in what you said last episode, and that is that we have a block in which Ned gets to prove himself as the number one.
I haven't seen him floating into dangerous areas around the ground. I haven't seen him getting back to prevent a lot of stuff. Certainly no shots on goal. So there's a lot of upside.
Well, that's certainly some spin to put on it. Yes, there's a lot of areas to improve in, and I guess that's good, but it's not his ruck craft. It's everything else. I just don't see the impact anywhere else on the ground. I think that's a problem. I think it's a shame. It's a shame.
Is it third-year blues for Newcomb?
Third-year blues. Is that a thing, is it?
Maybe it's second-year blues, but it ends halfway through this year because, you know, he's picked up halfway through.
Yeah. I see what you mean. Is it Will Day being out? Is it that influential?
Possibly. But you don't want to be that side. You don't want to be that side that's so heavily dependent on one fella.
Absolutely. We had a question here from Patrick basically saying, look, Hawthorn is 0-2. The media's piling in. The racism investigation's in the news again, because obviously they're trying some reconciliation, and there's been barely a mention of Dingley, apart from, you know, some aerial shots. Have I woken up and gone back to 2023 again in the last few days? Well, it does feel a little bit like that.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it is. There are a few tired old stories, but I was surprised by the amount of venom that came for Mitchell this week, and also some of it. Well, you got to say misdirected at Corns, but he does mount a pretty good case that Mitchell is progressing, even if it doesn't appear so on field.
The whole thing's a beat up. I mean, a coach will make mistakes. Some are less obvious than others. Mitchell tried something. It didn't work. We move on. That's it. We don't need him to be scorched by the footy media for that. That's just them filling in time for another week, which is, by the way, a lot of what footy media is.
And at least he mentioned his opponent in his presser. Let's just underline that.
Just case in point, such a non-story. Thank you, Caro. That is just complete nonsense. Didn't need that.
She reckons she vetted it with other, you know, learned journos, and they were like, oh, yes, Caro. And then can you imagine them going, oh, I hope she goes with this. I really do. Maybe if I just agree that she'll run with this on the arrow. But it would be a thing, wouldn't it? Remember when you had to do that rant every week and how hard that was to get up for? Well, her arrow would be taking its toll by now, wouldn't it?
Yeah. There's got to be some weeks where the quiver is empty, basically. I've got nothing left.
Aiden has a good question. If we had 8 50-point losses last season, then how many is too many this season?
Yeah, we've jumped from Caro to Damo. If then, I'll be honest with you, mate, I didn't realise that we had 8 50-point losses or 50-plus point losses last season. I might have repressed that somehow.
I think we had a better defence last year in terms of structure. Let's come back to this question after we do the Box Hill recap, eh?
Okay. And that's probably the most positive stuff of the whole weekend, was the VFL and the VFLW.
It was like watching the Saturday game, but they'd reversed the Guernseys.
That is a great shout, actually. Box Hill Hawks 12-15-87 defeated Casey Demons 6-10-46. Yes, Box Hill crushed Casey by 41 points, beating them for the first time in 5 years, thanks in part to a dominant display in the first term that made for very fun watching indeed. We held a 35-point lead before Casey finally hit back on the scoreboard, but really, they never looked likely. Box Hill was never seriously challenged. In fact, Tiz, we probably should have run away with it further, to be honest.
Yeah, there were moments in the first half where I was thinking, stop missing because you're going to give them a chance. But it didn't work out that way.
No. 6-12 from set shots. They could improve in that area, fair to say.
Yeah, and look, the key stats. Plus 60 for uncontested possessions, which are the most important because you've got control. Plus 67 in marks, plus 21 for inside 50s, plus 11 for scoring shots, plus 14 in hitouts, and plus 7 for clearances. Look, the first thing I'll go with is Meek made a statement, and he was great.
Yeah, but mate, it's only against a VFL no-name, so don't even bother entertaining putting him in the seniors.
Mate, you can only beat what's in front of you.
Thank you. Thank you. Unless we are waiting for Max Gawn to play the twos, this is the system we have. That there's guys in the VFL who prove themselves against VFL players, and they're elevated on the merit of that, and that's it. That's the system.
It's like I always say, if you have to beat an egg, it's going to get whipped. Do you know what I mean?
Okay.
Moving right along from that terrible analogy.
Look, Meek was great. And yes, he played against an opponent without a wealth of experience, but you know, he put his hand up for selection in a major way. 15 touches, 2 goals, 6 marks, 26 hitouts. If you didn't have the stats, you would know that he was having an impact. He had presence, and it wasn't just in the ruck contests.
He's still a big fella, isn't he? And he was holding his own in the forward line when he went forward. Also, Morrison, he probably deserves to be in that lineup now. His ball movement was excellent. 28 touches, 9 marks, 9 of the inside 50s, and just dependable. You can see the experience in his play.
Yeah, there's the school of thought that he's in a little bit of purgatory in this place in his career at the moment, where he's clearly too good for VFL. He will be in the best in the VFL, no doubt about it, but will it translate to AFL level consistently?
Also, is he the future, which is the question that probably rides over his being selected.
Yeah, I've got to say the jury's out for me. I'm not sure about that question, but all I can see is that he put his hand up for selection and he needs to be in the frame at the very least.
So there are two guys that everyone knows is in the seconds and could be playing firsts, okay? And then there's these two guys who everyone's thinking, will they, won't they? And that's Hustwaite and Butler, and both are very determined to get into that lineup.
Yeah, Hustwaite was very industrious in the middle with 24 touches, 8 clearances and 9 tackles. He did some pretty cool things, to be honest. Like, he had some moments, some disposals that were very classy, very important, and really set us up. I was impressed.
Couple of shimmies to buy himself time. He didn't give it to guys under pressure. He gave it to better options. Then we had Butler, who was putting pressure on his opponent all the time and kicked 3 himself. And Butler is tremendously fit. He's done all the work over the preseason, and he needs reward for his effort.
Yeah, it's a good question about when that opportunity is going to come, how it's going to come.
Bruce did go off with an injury.
Yeah, I'd say there's a couple of guys. Bruce, Ginnivan, Moore, Watson. These are the paths back to the senior team for Butler. And if Bruce is out this week, which obviously, fingers crossed, he's not because he's Luke Bruce, then I think Butler would get a look for sure.
Yeah.
So among the best, we had Meek, Hustwaite, Morrison. I thought Sarong was pretty solid. I could tell him running around. I thought he's put on some size. I like it. And he looks very adept, comfortable, confident, I think.
Isn't he a wonderful kick? Wonderful field kick, Sarong.
He is. He's really settled into a defensive role quite nicely. And of course, Callum Brown, once again, he will be one of the figureheads of Box Hill's success this season. It feels like it was yesterday that we were watching him run around doing some of those things. He will be in the best most weeks, you would say.
Now, let's get back to the question from Aiden earlier. If we had 8 50-point losses last season, how many is too many this season? And we're going to talk about Ethan Phillips and just how you saw his game. 21 touches for Ethan Phillips. What did you think of what he was able to do out there?
15 marks as well, mate.
15 marks and a lot of relieving marks. And he just seems a sure set of hands in that back 50. Someone you can rely on, a little bit bigger than most, and he reads the play very well.
Let's do it. Let's get him in.
Because it frees up Sicily.
Is it a trial by fire? Yeah, I mean, it is, but let me put it this way. When is it not going to be? I mean, Hawthorn's down the bottom end of the ladder. A lot of our opponents have, you know, genuine threats that are always going to be a task. I just think we're coming up against a Geelong outfit with Cameron and Hawkins. That is a duo. I don't think we can just sit idly by and do nothing about that at the selection table. It's asking for trouble.
So what you're saying is, you know, go easy. You're on Hawkins. You're on Hawkins in his 350th. Don't worry about it. It'll be fine. Nothing bad has ever happened to a raw defender that Hawthorn have put onto a much bigger opponent at the MCG.
Okay, well then you're taking him to gather round then, because there's no point delaying it.
I'm just looking forward to Scrimshaw on Hawkins, or where are you putting the Scrimmer this week?
Forward line? I don't know.
Oh, yes, I did read that tweet. Send Scrimmer forward. That was interesting.
I mean, it had some good results last year. It was a little bit of an experiment that Sammy toyed with. And look, I don't know. It's going to be a task for sure.
Weddle on Cameron, perhaps, another thing I read.
Oh, boy. Yeah.
Yep.
Going to be tough to curtail their forwards. Once again, it really draws attention to the midfield battle.
No danger this week.
No danger this week. We desperately need to win that battle, because if it gets into the forward line, we're stuffed. That's what I've learned over the last 2 weeks. And now we've got two of the best forwards in the comp up against us. So, yeah.
I still think it'll be a genuinely interesting game. I think Hawthorn can probably attack Geelong better than they can attack Melbourne. And I think they can win a lot more ball in the midfield. Even from the first week, I've said we usually set ourselves for the Geelong game. That's historically been the case when we were a developing team anyway. It's very much like what Roos did when he was at Melbourne. He would set them a game every 4 to 5 weeks, which they had to be on for. And I think this is it. The Easter Monday game.
I got to say that I actually watched a sizable chunk of Geelong Adelaide last week, and I don't know, I don't think Geelong were that flash.
Adelaide were very frustrating.
Oh, they absolutely were. Adelaide did things that, you know, even as a neutral supporter, you just groan at the TV. And they're like, how did they stuff that up? What happened there?
Taylor Walker, gosh, he looked out of touch. They were kicking over each other's heads and all this. I don't know what Adelaide were trying. They'd rolled out terribly against Gold Coast the week before.
Wasn't there one moment in which an Adelaide bloke got hit flush in the face with a footy? Am I remembering that wrong? I think there was.
The other thing that was, the only guys that performed worse were the security, of course.
That was embarrassing.
You got to love Cameron for giving the holding the ball, though. That was
that's very good. Very comical. Anyway, I think we can take it up to Geelong. We'll circle back around to that game in a moment. I think we need to talk about the other game that was out at Casey Fields, and that
what happened here? This is ridiculous.
Box Hill Hawks, 19-8-122, defeated Casey Demons, 2-2-14.
In the VFLW, and Casey are this bad.
Apparently, yeah. That's our third consecutive win over the Ds. Casey kicked the first goal of the game 4 minutes in, and that's about as good as it got for them. What followed was an avalanche. The club website, the Hawthorn website, reported the Hawks finished the match with 10 individual goal scorers, with surges inside 50 courtesy of AFLW stars Jazz Fleming, Emily Bates and Eliza West, who notched up 39, 31 and 25 disposals respectively. 45 inside 50s to 14. We actually had 10 of our AFLW stars out there, which obviously contributed to that sort of outcome. It was Mieta Kendall, one of my favourites from the VFLW squad. That was the leading goal kicker. They finished with 5 goals. I couldn't watch it live. I went back to the highlights for this one, and boy, what a treat. It makes me excited quite early on like in the piece for the AFLW, because I mean, some of our players look so good. I know it's VFLW level, I understand that, but the sheer pace of Bates and Fleming was quite something.
So we can assume that the footballing style will be continuous and into the AFLW.
Yes, I believe that's the case. They're going to rotate some of the AFLW players through the VFLW system as a kind of pre-season, I suppose.
Excellent. That's logical, and certainly if they're going to have a scoring focus, that'll be much better to watch.
All right, well, mate, we better look ahead to Easter Monday. I've got to flag, first of all, that this will be the first Easter Monday blockbuster I'll have missed in, well, I don't actually remember. It's probably the first time in well over a decade, put it that way.
Come on, it was only Melbourne, Nick.
I have to work. I have to work. That's legitimate. That's a legitimate thing. I have to miss it. But I have some thoughts about the changes that we might want to consider making. And you might accuse me of swinging the axe. I think that's your preferred method of trolling me in this moment as we read through some of these names. You're gonna say that I've thrown the baby out with the bathwater. A horrible saying, but anyway.
Nah, not really. I can see the names now, but what I will say is that you just can't give carte blanche to that kind of performance. So there need to be changes.
So I've said that, this will be unsurprising given I flagged it before, I would entertain Reeves making way. I don't think he will, but I would recommend that Meek gets a run. So Reeves out, Ward I think could make way, McGuinness and Gunston, and I'd bring in Meek, Hustwaite, Morrison and Phillips.
Who's your sub?
Maybe Watson?
Notice Bruce isn't listed.
I wasn't actually sure what the case was with Bruce. I know you mentioned before he's injured, but we're actually, at the time of recording, still waiting on some official confirmation around injuries from the club. So
maybe Morrison is your impact sub.
I think if I'm taking Ward out of the side, then I would like to replace him with a winger immediately.
What about Bailey McDonald in the twos? He looked pretty good.
He's so fun to watch. He's so quick. I mean, if you talk about a guy that's going to take the game on, he knows only one way.
There are a couple of moments where, you know, Seamus Mitchell looked excellent as well.
But mate, sorry, I have to burst your bubble. I have to bring you back down to earth. It was only VFL level. Big difference between AFL and VFL. I don't know if you know this, so no changes.
Can we pick Jed Rule?
Oh, Jed Rule, so good to see him back. And commentary mentioned that was only like his fourth VFL game. And you know last year how much we banged on about this. He's played four games.
Yeah, I know. It's just something about the kid. And there was a wonderful boomerang goal on the weekend. Terrific to watch.
What do you think of Andreas Stefanakis?
He finally got a goal. He was likely so many times.
Dre himself needed a doctor, I think, at one point.
And Clay Tucker. I liked a couple of things he did. Cultured Deer took a nice mark. Unfortunately, Parsons is done for the year, is he?
Yeah. He's injured his Achilles in his return game. Really sad story, because especially the talent that he brings to that lineup, that's going to be sorely missed once again. And just a sad story all around. We wish him the best in his recovery.
So the point I'm making, I guess, in a roundabout way, is Mitchell has a very hard task of working out exactly what is his best side. There are so many guys that are putting their hand up who look like they could be good at the level, and maybe he just needs to back his own opinion, because you can't keep changing the team, but then again, you've got to keep rewarding. It's a very delicate balance, very delicate.
It is, and then you've got several guys who are simply out of action at the moment, who when they recover, when they reach full fitness again, they'll return to the frame, and they'll be asking questions of, you know, can I get back into the side? Where's my path back in? I mean, the first guy that comes to mind for me is CJ. I mean, once he's fully fit again, he instantly stakes his claim to come back into the senior side.
I think all those changes you've earmarked there look quite good. Meek, Hustwaite, Morrison, Phillips, they'll all have an impact for us. Certainly Hustwaite played so well against Melbourne last year. I don't really understand why he couldn't play this year. Reeves and Meek in the same lineup. You know, Geelong are quite tall. It'll be a good day. I just hope we're closer, and I hope we play in an aggressive and attacking manner, because when you see Petrarca running back, punching the ball away with a minute to go against Lewis, and there's no real, it's like a party atmosphere, just that's sickening.
Yeah, it's quite demoralizing, especially for someone who hates the D's as much as you.
At least make Petrarca earn it, you know?
Well, the kick probably should have been for goal to begin with. It was an unselfish play. It didn't come off. There's a lot that they could address. But, I mean, what I'm looking for is I want something to cling on to get more excited about. Like I said, I could rattle off on one hand, less than one hand. I found three moments that genuinely got me very excited and that were fun to watch. And, you know, round one, I could say that there was much more than that. And then round two, I felt like we took a step backwards. And, I don't know, I just want more. I want more this week. I want to enjoy more football. So hopefully they can bring the fire. Even if it is a loss, I'm really not sure how good Geelong are and how well we can match them. But we will see.
Well, I tell you what, I'm really warming to Chol. I wasn't enamoured of getting Chol. I thought he was the guy who was left available and we went and got him. But he looks quite good for us.
I'm satisfied with all of our recruits, I reckon. I think they'll be good long term. I'm very happy with what they've shown so far.
And I think he's putting in the effort too, Chol. I think he's really trying. I noticed 5 tackles, most of anyone in the team. Pretty incredible that.
Not bad at all. It's just something about the number 5. Something number 5 sticking out. Oh, that's right. You can rate us 5 stars on Apple Podcasts. A tenuous segue.
Effortless. Effortless.
It's our round 2 as well, mate. You can rate us on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. We'd really love it if you could spare a moment or two to rate and review the show. That'd be wonderful. It really puts our name up in lights, so to speak. It helps other hawkers to find the show. Meanwhile, we'd also love for you to join us over on our social media platforms. We're on X, we're on Instagram, we're also on Facebook. Just join the conversation. Get the buzz going. Get excited about Hawthorn in 2024. Ride the bumps with a grin with us this season. And finally, of course, we'd like to give a shout out to our Patreon subscribers who very much support what we do. They fling us a bit of coin and they allow us to put time into this show each and every week. And we very much appreciate that. Thank you for all the support. We'd like to take this opportunity as well to extend a thank you to everyone that stopped by the MCG outside the G. To pick up a copy of the season guide. We thought after round one, we thought, no, there'll be a couple of people that stop by, be a couple of people interested in saying hi and pick up a copy of the season guide. We were inundated. I think it was busier than week one.
I think it was too. It's great fun.
Yeah, absolutely. Everyone was up and about and everyone was quite lovely as well. It was so nice meeting our listeners and so nice meeting the people that really appreciate what we do and want to put support behind our show. That means the world to us. So thank you to everyone that came out and said hi and picked up a season guide. I think that might be it for them, to be honest. I think we might have run out of season guides. That's a first for the Hawk Talk podcast. We usually have a couple floating around, but I think we might be all out.
I thought we were going to do the Uber surge thing, so that now there are so few left, the price went up. We're not doing that.
I think we can take that onto the whiteboard, mate. Let's blue sky it. Let's get a brainstorm going. We'll talk about it off mic.
One for the thought board, is it, Nick?
That's right. Patreon.com/HawkTalkPod if you love the show and want to support us. All kinds of bonus content available there. We'd love to have you on board.
Well, it's going to be a beautiful day Monday. I hope we get a lot of hawkers out there.
Another home game. It'd be nice to see a huge crowd in attendance.
And it was good to see Max as the MC, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. When they flagged that, a mystery MC, I was like, who could it possibly be? And when they revealed it to be Max Lynch, that warmed the heart. I thought that was a fantastic choice.
Oh, I thought, it's going to be Harford again.
I mean, poor Max as well. I mean, he's really up against it, talking up the day as Hawthorn gets demolished by Melbourne.
and then he got booed in between the Melbourne anthem because he came out and he said, "I hope Hawthorn supporters are here for our next home game against Geelong on Easter Monday." And then there was a boo and some discontent, and then it went back to the theme song again. It's like, oh gosh.
Well, that'll be it, mate, for the Hawk Talk podcast for another week. I have to acknowledge that there might be some things that we're missing given the time that we're recording. Is there any hope whatsoever that there's reconciliation all of a sudden between some Hawthorn officials and you know, some of our favourite players.
It's the time for miracles, I guess. That's about, that's about all I've got.
We're not going to have a better call than that. We will end the podcast for this week. That is sensational.
Next time you hear from us, we'll be in Adelaide.
That's right. That's right. There's a lot going on for the Hawk Talk podcast. Make sure you follow us on social. Make sure you keep up with us. We've got plenty to come throughout season 2024. We are a happy team at Hawthorn.